I always have to sort of open every one of these by saying, thanks for letting me do this, because it's quite a, you know, I'm really...
Already, I was surprised that this even lit off, because I imagine the first time you must have approached someone, you went, hey, for this podcast, I just need your Amazon account password and stuff. They would have been like, no. So I'm impressed that you got this going. I would have been like, is this a scam?
Every time people let me in, I'm like, Are you sure you want to let me do this? But you know, it's too late now, Reese. I'm deep in, man.
You're in deep. I'm ready to be surprised and ashamed and all of the things.
We're going to do all the emotions on My Mate Bought a Toaster. That's what we do. Oh, when I need a laugh, there's a helping people. Don't pass talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, it's My Mate Bought a Toaster. All right, so this is My Mate Bought a Toaster, and I am joined this week by the brilliant presenter and, you know, full-time dancer now, Reese Stevenson. Hello, welcome to the show.
You're too kind, Tom. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming on the show, and thank you for being stupid enough to let me into your Amazon account.
What was I thinking? You know what this is like, right? It's like Squid Game. I know this is mad. This is insane. And yet I still chose to come back.
Yeah.
I still chose to do it.
Yes.
But here I am.
Okay, well, listen, green light, let's go. We are going back to an appropriate or not date. The first order that you made is on the 1st of April. Yeah, April Fools, Reese, in 2013, my friend.
Oh my gosh, what is that? What is this going to... Oh, it's going to be like some Pokemon thing or something, isn't it? Oh, gosh.
I've already scrolled past some Pokemon. We'll get onto that. You have bought... Oh, it's nice. It's a nice innocent start. £2.77 you've spent here on the on a flower and butterfly series back hard case for an iPhone 4. So it's an iPhone 4.
Okay. Oh, all right. Now, I know exactly. I think I remember this very well. Computers scare me very much. As a young person, they still scare me. I don't trust it. So anytime there's a new thing, I like to start small. So like, you know, Uber... I took an Uber to just like down the street just to check I was going to get kidnapped.
A little recce. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember this iPhone. I got an iPhone because I had a Windows phone for ages and I didn't really care about having smartphones, whatever, whatever. And it wasn't until Pokemon Go came out. And I was like, crap. And a friend messaged me and said, bro, do you want to meet up in London and go hunting? And I was like, dude, I don't have an iPhone. And he went, what? Reese, this is you. And I went, I know, I just don't have an iPhone. He goes, right, well, like, if you do, let me know. But until then, we can't be friends. And then just stopped. And I was like, right, mate, where can I get an iPhone 4 on the cheap? And then I bought a case for it and everything. And I've never looked back now, rocking my iPhone 12 Pro.
So it was the Pokemon army that brought you to the Apple.
It did. Like, Pokemon's always been the thing that's made me buy the new games consoles, right? So like when they, I'd be like with my DS and then the 3DS is out, I'm like, I'm not buying that. And then it's like the new Pokemon games, I'm like, well, you got me. And then they brought this phone app and I went, I will not allow this Japanese franchise to make me buy a phone. I'm not doing it. It did it.
But also, like, at that point, Pokemon Go, it feels like it's still a thing, and some of my kids' friends do it now. But at that point, Pokemon Go was huge. And also, because it combined this thing where you can, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, you walk around with your phone and you see in the real world, but sort of virtually on your phone, you've got your camera on your phone, and you see these Pokemons on your phone, sort of not in real life, but sort of in real life.
I really hate to be that guy, Tom.
Go on, be the guy.
It's not Pokemon. It's like sheep. It's Pokemon. I'm sorry. I just can't.
Hang on, the
nerd in me had to say it.
Of course. Go on, what?
Just Pokemon. It's plural and singular. That's just how we
So you don't say Pokemons?
You don't say... You never do.
Okay, right. Okay, because the thing is... So this is the thing, because Pokemon are everywhere in my life
everywhere.
At the moment. Everywhere, because my kids are obsessed. So they've got...
Me and your kids would have a good couple of hours. I would educate them on everything. They'd learn everything from me.
I mean, have you thought about it as a side hustle, mate? When you're not doing CBBC.
I've done it with a co-worker at CBBC. Her son got into it and she would ask me for everything. I was like, listen, this is what you do. This is what you do. This is this type that. And she still talks to me about it. Like, you helped me so much. I was like, anytime for free.
This is great. Because you're bridging the gap. You've got middle-aged parents like me. You're a young thing and you can tell us how to bridge the gap between me and my kids.
I'm the missing link. It's me.
It's true, though. To be honest, I think Pokemon's more the missing link. Pokemon are more the missing link. I do want to dwell on this because I'm fascinated by how it's exploded into my kids' life in the last few months, sort of year or so. Is it owned by Nintendo? And they're just little cartoon characters, right?
Yeah. So it's owned by Nintendo, and it started off as, it's basically a video game, and but it's exploded into just everything. It's like Japanese Disney in a way. And it's in a world where there are these creatures in that, which is like, they're animals, but they're called Pokemon, but they've got abilities that some can shoot lasers out their eyes or fire from their mouths or electrocute you. And yet this is a safe world. And in this world, when a child becomes 10, you give them one of these beasts and you send them to the world to catch more and fight others with these Pokemon. And so it's like dog fighting, but it's cute.
Oh, no, dog fighting is cute with Chihuahuas. It's fine. Yeah, totally.
It came out in like 1997 and I was obsessed with it in primary school. And the funny thing is how it's still big now, in fact, even bigger, which as a business model, how do you do that? And I remember when I realized how much it stood the test of time, because I used to do science workshops in primary schools when I was about like 20, 22, 23.
Okay.
And I remember I came in with like my science kit ready to do it. And I was looking at the board of this primary school, like notices, and it said Pokemon cards have now been banned because children have been fighting over them. And I was like, that happened to me when I was 8. How are we still here more than 20 years later?
Breaking news for you, mate. 2022. We're recording this on a Friday. Friday is Pokemon Day at my kid's school.
Yes.
So,
I need to be the spokesman. Mate, let me go.
You need to be a Pokemon. So every single Friday morning, my two little boys, who are 6 and 9, they go really quiet before they go to school. And I'm like, why are they being so good this morning? And I go into their little bedroom and they've got all their Pokemon cards out and they're getting ready for a day on the markets.
Or to sell and trade.
To trade.
Yes! I love this! Oh my gosh! I know, and it's like, they're literally, kids will get into fights over these little pieces of artwork. I've never known anything like it. It's, you know, because the thing is, kids will con you. Like, honestly, like, your son will come home and he'll be like, oh, Dad, I just got this Weedle and I traded my Charizard for it. This kid told me it's a good deal. You're like, bro, you just got made. Your life's been had, because Weedle's weak, Charizard's strong. Okay. You don't trade that. But a 10-year-old, this is when you know who's going to grow into a future hustler, because a 10-year-old will see that and be like, that kid's got a shiny Charizard. And you have his Weedle, be like, hey, kid, this Pokemon, you need it. You need it. Trust me, I'm giving you such a good deal. If you give me this now, we'll say no more about it. And the kid's like, oh, okay, and they swap it. That's how it happens.
This is what is happening to it's my little six-year-old. He has to, so we've got a deal. My six-year-old, it's a bit like the Financial Services Authority. My six-year-old has to go to the nine-year-old to get things signed off, to get all his deals signed off, right? And if the nine-year-old disagrees, so what I would love, right, I'm going to FaceTime you, right, when they come home. All right, boys, what have you done? Tell Reese.
I'll be like, all right, that's good. That's fine. Because the thing is, it's a massive market now. So there are cars that are going for thousands and thousands of pounds.
So this is the other thing. Yes. So then the other thing that happened today as well is that there's a new genre, I don't know if it's genre or line of Pokemon cards that are coming out today at 12:30. Yeah. There's a Nerd Cafe near us. That's what it's called. It's a brilliant name for it. Geek Cafe or Nerd Cafe. Holloway Road. It's amazing. And I went in yesterday because my kid was playing football near there. And I was like, have you got any Pokemon cards? Because I just have to supply them more than food. Right. And he said, no, we haven't got any because we've got a new line coming out tomorrow. And I was like, all right, they're just there. And he went, yeah, but I'm not allowed to sell them until 12:30 tomorrow. And I was like, mate, just give us some cards. And he was like, no.
Just give them to me.
He said, I can't do it. So I've got to go and get some after this. I've got to get my kids and I've got to go and buy some cards. What is happening?
Oh, man, listen, you need to treat Pokemon with respect. You can't be walking in there being like, look, come on, set me some. Like, you're not. You know, unless you're like Jay-Z or something, they ain't going to sell you those things before it's time. It's like the Oscars when they've got like the envelopes and stuff and they send like two different people with a golden envelope. That's how they are with the Pokemon cards. You can't.
It's great though. What I like is I've got this with Mario. I've got to marry him, right? He came into my life at a time when I needed him, about the age of 8, and he has stuck with me ever since. And I see any new Mario game, that inner child in me. And this relates to you and what you do for a living, because you're on CBBC and you're having to stay in touch with that inner child. And that's what you do so well. That thing of remembering that initial reaction and that initial passion and keeping that fresh. And that's not that easy to do, right?
No, it's not. And you know, it's funny, like sometimes for me, CBBC has been wonderful in doing that, allowing me to still connect with my inner child and stuff. And especially when, if you've got a show coming on and it's like a reboot of a show I used to watch, I can go in. I remember we had like The Worst Witch, and I was like, guys, let me tell you about The Worst Witch, man. Mildred, she was doing a madness. I could just go for it. And I love that. And it just brings all those memories back to me of running home to like catch CBBC or sometimes CITV before homework and everything. It's such a wonderful thing. I think that's what kind of, maybe it's keeping me young at the moment. And then the minute I leave CBBC, I'll age properly.
And also the fact that you are ridiculously young helps as well, Reese, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that helps. That is really, really cool.
Also, you've got something to look forward to, which is there was a kids presenter back in the 70s called Tony Arthur. And she directed me in one of my first ever plays like 20 years ago. And loads of actors and comics who were friends of mine 20 years ago were of that generation where she was their kids presenter. And they met her. Oh. And this was grown men who were like 40, 50 years old. And they were meeting Tony, and they were like, and she's one of the most incredible women ever, and they were so starstruck. And she would stand there at the Pleasance Courtyard in Edinburgh, and she'd be effing and jeffing, swearing, smoking fags, and they couldn't get over it. This woman from play school, oh, potty mouth, right? So you've got a whole life of this ahead of you.
And it blows their minds. We had a talent party at CBBC, and so we had these kids come in that were on this, it was a show called So Awkward. So it kind of finished around 2 years ago, and they're all like teenagers. And so they're coming in, they're all very, very cool and stuff. They're the stars of this, you know, hit comedy on the show, on the channel. And then Ed Petrie walks in.
Oh, I love Ed Petrie. He was a comic. Yes. Good mate of mine. Yes.
Who I watched on CBBC at an Oucho. So Oucho was like the Hackety Dog of that era.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit starstruck seeing him. And he comes and he's just being Ed. He's just in a, you know, casual t-shirt, whatever, whatever. Next thing I know, he's like, those cool teenagers are around him, crowded after the pictures, because they know him as well. And they're like, oh my gosh. And it's that power of like, when you're a child star, when those kids become adults, it never goes.
No.
It's such a wonderful thing, because I think you remind them of a time where things were simpler and they were safe.
Mm.
I think it's that wonderful nostalgia rush that they get. And it's so much more pure than when you see someone who's famous kind of now in like the charts and like, that you've known as an adult or as a teenager. Something about seeing someone who you idolize as a kid, it's gorgeous.
It's a precious thing.
Yeah, you're right. I look forward to that. I look forward to being like 50 years old, and then I've got some like 30-year-old being like, oh my gosh, it's you.
Yes. And you'll be in some bar in Magaluf saying, buy us a drink, mate, please. Please, yeah. I've lost everything. Absolutely. Please help me.
Oh, my days, this is so embarrassing. I don't remember buying all these silly little strange things. I swear on my life, I was forced by my wife with an ABBA penknife that I bought on ABBA. Wait a minute.
Reece Stevenson, let's move on, shall we? We're still in 2013 now. And again, I guess this is a big part of your life as well. We've got, you've bought a bookmark and a journal, Keep Calm and Pray, beaded bookmark.
Oh, what's that for?
Well, to remind you to pray, mate.
Maybe remind me to pray, because going to church for all my years just wasn't enough. Like, I need a bookmark that says that, and that helped me out. Gosh, that makes me sound like a kind of perfect on Christian Mingle, doesn't it? Good Lord.
What's Christian Mingle?
It's a dating site that Christians go on, and it just sounds mad. I'm sure it's wonderful, but like, I remember...
Of course.
I remember friends joke with me and go like, oh, why don't you go on like Christian Mingle? I was like, no, because I'd end up with someone who'd probably just spout verses every 2 seconds or something. I just don't... Like, or, you know, the fear is that you'd get someone from some like small... I don't know why I always imagine from like some small Alabama town, just like... with a Bible now, to shout in the end of times. I'm sure it's a wonderful sight. It just wasn't for me.
There's nothing more unbecoming than competitive faith. I don't think faith should be competitive, should it?
I can't stand that. No, yeah, absolutely. Going like, I'm more Christian or Muslim or Hindu than you. It's like, can't we all just be grateful of that? And like, there are verses that are like, look, don't mind your business and focus on your faith, and let them focus on theirs. It's right there. But I think as humans, we love to be competitive about everything, don't we? Yes. Everything's got to be a competition. Everything's got to be you know, I can do this more than you. It's an unhealthy trait.
I know.
Essentially.
I know it is. It really is. It's yeah, it's true, but I'm happy to say that we're number 19 in the podcast charts, and that's the most important thing.
And that's, and I'm glad to see that you're learning once again, you know. Forget all that. Number 19, that's great. Come Why aren't you 18?
You're never going to be happy. What are you? But this is you. You know what? This does lead to an important thing. Come on, let's have the Strictly chat. When you came, what was it, third or fourth? You should have been back for the last weekend. Let's not talk about that. You know, and you're doing Strictly, which is an expression of pure joy, and the nation adored you, Reese, for that precious chunk of time. You were so close to my heart. I promise you, I'm not just gushing pointlessly here. It was an important chunk of my life, and yet ultimately it was a competition. That's a weird conflict, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, it was. I wanted to be on Strictly for such a long time. I was such a big fan. I think around for a few good years, I watched Jay McGuinness win it, and I was like, this show's sick.
Yeah.
And when I got the chance, I thought, this is literally my dream. Like, one of the biggest dreams I've ever had, to be on Strictly. And I loved the show. But what I didn't realize was the competition ate me up so much. Because the thing was, it wasn't so much about beating anyone. It was just wanting to stay on the show. The fear was, if I lose, I leave. And I don't know if I can handle watching the show at home, knowing I was on it last week. And so that's what really consumed me. So every time before I go out there to dance, I'd be like, this could be my last one. I could mess up. And it was a kind of nerves that I don't ever want to go back to. It was so much, because I think it's the kind of thing, because it was a negative thing that came from my love for the show. Mm. And you forget it's a competition when you just watch it at home. But when you're in it, that's all you can think about. So I'd watch the other contestants do a dance and it would be amazing. And I'd go like, that was amazing. And so like for the first 5 seconds, I'm clapping going, that was phenomenal. And then for the rest of it, I'm there going, I don't know if mine's that good.
You're like, this is what I want to hear. This is what
it's
I want
horrible.
To hear. I always think of you guys sitting there when you all have to watch and everyone goes, oh, it's amazing. I'm so happy for you and stuff like that. And I get that. I totally buy all that. But I need to know the real reality of the human condition behind it, which is actually thinking, fall over. Come on, you bastard. Come on, AJ. I just want AJ to slip. Oh, no, I didn't mean it. Oh, no, what have I done?
Well, it's more like right, if you sit there and if someone does make a mistake, you are devastated for them, because yeah. You're like, I don't want to wish that on you. But at the same time, it kind of makes you feel a bit calmer to think that if I mess up, then at least we've messed up together. Yes. And I'm with someone else in it. So it's less of like, yeah, go on. Yeah, you're done for. But it's more of, okay, like I can go up there, and if I mess up, I won't die either. Yeah. So that's kind of helpful. But then as well, with Strictly, like when if you're the kind of competitive person who would hope for people to lose, the way Strictly works is because midway through the series, people kind of latch onto who they like anyway, right? And so when you can tell who's very popular, even if they made a mistake or not, you're like, it doesn't matter. They're through. Mm. They're safe. Mm. Because they have that backing. It's about getting that fan base behind you really early on and building on that, and then consistently being good.
Dan Walker, excuse me, just clearing my.
That was not where I was going with, Tom. How dare you cough words into my mouth? No, you know what? There is that competition element. But what was really beautiful about this year was everyone did genuinely love each other and want the best for each other. And I mean, like, if I was struggling with something throughout the week and we happened to be training in the same room as another couple, their pro might come in and help me out whilst Nancy would have gone and helped them. Like, it was a real... Everyone knew it was a competition, but at the same time, they realize that for us, this is the only time we're going to do it. Yeah. And they want us to enjoy it. And it's not fun if we go out there and we're miserable.
No.
So everyone needs to be happy. But yeah, the fact that it was a competition messed me up. That's why when we did the tour, I loved it. The tour was everything that I wanted from Strictly, that I felt like I couldn't get on the show because I was so busy in my head trying to survive.
Yes.
In this competition.
Right.
You know, the tour was a show. The tour was... Hey, you know, this is not all for fun. There's no repercussions for messing up or anything. You just go out there and enjoy yourselves. Whereas the show felt a bit more like Dancing Squid Game. And that, for me.
Dancing Squid Game, it's so true.
I wouldn't change it. It's one of the proudest things I've ever done. But I think for me, I'm a deeply competitive person. And so when everyone was like, enjoy it, I'm like, I enjoy it when I do well.
Mm.
Don't do well, I can't. It's very... You know, it's just the way I'm wired.
Of course, you've got high standards. And that told in some of those dances you did. My God, they were amazing, Reese. My God. And who's your best Strictly friend, please? Who's the one you're still pals with after all of this? Nancy?
No, I get I love Nancy. Nancy still sends me cat videos, reels on the daily, and I respond to them as quick as I can. So yeah, Nancy and I still chat. In fact, she video called into CBBC this week and surprised me, and I was like, "Oh, where have you been?" So I still speak to Nancy. Tilly Ramsey, I love Tilly much. Tilly Ramsey's great, and I got on with everyone. It was Tilly and Rose. Kaya Widrington were the new pros. Mm-hmm. Me and Kaya got on so much, and we'll still smack talk each other about table tennis, because that's all we did on the tour. And he beat me like 90% of the time. Like, I got him a few, like, odd 10%.
Listen,
he's dynamite.
Table tennis, right?
Don't.
Celebrity table. Tim Key was on this show a few weeks ago, and we talked table tennis then. Celebrity table tennis. That needs to happen as a TV show.
That needs to happen. It needs to be celebrity table tennis around the world. A bunch of celebs and do around the world, where you've got to run around the table with table tennis and like do it that way. Yeah. That would be sensational. I'd be in, but I'll do that.
You'd get like a team captain on each team, and they would have to go around the celebrity world compiling their team.
Yeah, yeah. So it could be like red team, blue team, have them alternate. Mm. And so it's like whoever, and then so like, because how it works is you play around the world until you get the last two, and then they play just normal table tennis, like first to three, and they have your winner. So you have like a red team, blue team, keep playing, and hope that, you know, the one who survives at the end is on your team.
Oh, such a great... I start every school day. You'd walk into school and you'd hear people shouting, "Round the world, who wants to play around the world?"
Yeah.
"Who wants to play around the world?" In a really dull way. "Who wants to play around the world?"
And the thing is, you always knew... I learned this as well when I'd gone to like ping pong clubs and stuff. And you knew to fear someone by the way they held the racket. If they held it the Chinese way, I'm not playing you. If the paddle's on in the palm of their hand, I'm walking away. I will not.
The spin you can put on it.
The spin you can do. Because I'm not going to learn to play it that way. It just looks weird. But when I see a person hold it that weird way,
stand back.
I'm like, you've done
back.
Work.
Also,
I'm not doing.
I remember who was it? I think it was John Weatherlake pouring full fat Coke onto his bat, because the Coke would give it the stickiness and the swerve you could get on the ball, mate. Seriously.
Way.
Yeah. He's drug. Technically a drugs cheat. That's caffeine. That's a drug cheat. The thing about table tennis, we really need to move on. How is your interview with Reese? 40 minutes on table tennis, mate. The thing about table tennis is it's all instinct. That's what I love about it. You don't get any time to you just do it.
What gets me is when I play it, the times where I get like an amazing smash shot is when it wasn't planned, where I just did it to survive and catch it. Whereas when the ones where it's literally falling and it almost feels slow, man, you're planning too much. Yeah. That's when you hit the net and you don't make it.
Too much time to think, mate. It's like in Strictly. You can't step out of yourself. You can't get up in your head.
You can't step out of yourself. Can't get out of your head. That's exactly it, Tom.
Did that happen to you doing Strictly? Were there moments where you stepped out of yourself and thought, I am live in front of, you know, 12 million people and Tom Price?
Yeah, there were moments. There were Tom Price and his kids. There were moments where I think like doing the, it was when I did the jive for the dance off. So when Nancy and I were in the dance off for the jive during musicals week, and Nancy went to me, "Just enjoy it." Cause the whole time I was stressing about pointing my toes and everything. And I thought, you know what? I am so done with stressing about being perfect. Let me just enjoy myself. That's the whole point. So I went out there and I was like, to hell with the flicks, to hell with the kicks. I'm just going to do an entertaining dance to a really great song by Kenny Rogers. And we went for it. And I remember there was a moment where I think I heard the cheering as we were like going for it. And it was like an out-of-body experience, going like, what is happening? This is it. This is living. It was an incredible moment.
You let go. Yeah. You let go. You're in the...
I just let go. And people came up and were like, I think Cynthia Erivo, who was a guest judge, came up to me and went, "That fire... ever let it go." And she looked at me like, and I was laughing, and she was looking at me like, serious, like, I'm not kidding. She was like, "Don't let that go." And I went, "Yes, ma'am. Yeah." And
these are lessons. She's not talking about Strictly. She's talking about your life here.
Yeah. She was like, don't ever let that fire go out in you. And I thought, right, no, fair play. That's what I'm going to do. It was just, moments like that I won't forget. To have, you know, the woman who's playing Elphaba in the Wicked film telling me, like, don't let that fire go out. It was humbling.
So cool, man. So cool. So cool, but not as cool as the 26th of September 2014 when you bought An Introduction to Bioethics.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was That was because in uni I studied, most people don't know this, I studied human and medical science in university. Right. So I wanted to be a doctor at one point.
Right.
So I didn't get the grades in A level. So I was like, I'll do human and medical science.
What does that
get,
mean?
Like a 2-1 or higher.
It's like
human biology,
right,
essentially.
Right, okay.
So it's like a mixture of like the human body. There was a module on pharmacology, which was drugs.
Yeah.
You did like all those kind of things. It was like chemistry, biology, kind of mixed together. Mm. So bioethics was one of my favorite courses I did on it, actually, which was about like the ethics of science, the ethics of experiments, patenting, mm-hmm. as you'd say, like, you know, if you developed a drug and then patenting that and owning it. And it was just debating. And I think I did best at that because it was mostly about talking. That's where I shined. So I could argue anything. And so, or give a presentation. I was always really good at that. And so I remember I had to buy that book because that was on the module. And I read that thing. I mean, usually I struggle with reading certain textbooks. That one, I was like, I don't know what happened, but I breezed through
it. Really? Right? It held you, it captured you.
I know. But so now the thing is, I got my degree and I decided I didn't want to be a doctor my second year, but I completed it. But the thing is, if I ever changed my mind, I could apply for graduate medicine if I wanted to. But then imagine you're there and you need to do surgery and I walk in. You'd be like, no way. Absolutely not. Aren't you the guy that finished fourth? Get out of here.
You'd have to be an anaesthetist so you could loom up at people's faces just as they went out, just as they go under.
I'd just be like,
is that? I thought that was Reese from...
Keep dancing. Does it just won't go off?
Look at the stuff we're getting in 2015. You've got the Pikachu Lightning Legend of Zelda men's t-shirt. Size medium. Only for £4.
Size medium.
£4.14.
That was for my best friend Connor. Uh-huh. And he's a big fan of Zelda and Pokemon myself. So it was his birthday.
Okay.
So we're like, we always get each other geeky stuff. I remember I got him another birthday and bought him the Zelda Monopoly.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it and was like, perfect. And I was like, you know when you're so proud of a gift you can't wait for them to see it, and I like wrapped it up, came to his house, was like, bro, open it now. And he opens it, looks at it, but his reaction is not nowhere near what I wanted. I was like, why are you not screaming, why are you not happy? And he looked at me and I was like what? He went, mum and dad just got this for me as well. And I was like, oh
that's a killer.
Broken.
He shouldn't have told you. He shouldn't have told you.
He shouldn't have told me.
No. The rules are you go, thank you so much. I love you. As soon as you leave the house, you do what you need to do. But
you
don't tell people that they've double gifted. You know what I've got? Last year, my brother, he won't listen to podcasts. He doesn't like podcasts or me. He bought me two books for Christmas. They were both already had them, right? So I put them out, and there's just outside, there's one of those little cutesy bookshops in a sort of in a box, you know, someone in the front door, they like sometimes in old phone boxes they set up little bookshops, and there's one of those right by my house. And my brother came around the other day, this is a year later, he starts browsing that bookshop, and I've put both of these these books, the duplicates, into the bookshop, and he spots them both.
Shut up. That's like something in a sitcom. How are you that unlucky?
This is like that Dashim book I bought you last year for Christmas. Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Luckily, he didn't open it because it still says to Tom, best wishes. This is what he'll say. Not much love in my family. Kind regards. Warmest regards, Toby Price. Yeah.
Tom, don't die. Your brother.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, that's it. Yeah. So, you know, that's an important life rule. That's an important life rule. You always pretend that you've never seen it before. Oh my God, amazing. Thank you so much.
Then again, you know what goes around comes around, because then he bought me the Pokemon version of Monopoly and I already had it. So I was like, well, bro, you know what?
Fifth of October 2015, the Qualitex modelling balloons, 100 packs of modelling balloons. Is this for you?
That was for me. I had a short stint as doing children's parties as a children's entertainer. Oof. So a bit of extra cash.
Oof.
That, for one thing, can I say to all people who do that job, I rate you highly because it is hard. And so I was learning to make balloon animals and stuff, you know, these things. And I wasn't the best. I could do a decent dog, giraffe, which is just a dog with a longer neck.
Yeah.
The proudest one I could do was a teddy bear.
Wow.
Cool. I could. Yeah.
Snake. I could do a snake. That's fine. Eel.
Snakes are great.
Eel,
you know,
worm.
Nail.
Yeah.
I could do swords as well. And luckily, all the boys ever want is swords.
Sword.
Yeah. Sword. Yeah, so I did a bit of that.
Wow.
A I remember the best one, the favourite party I did was, it was like a sports party, so it was literally just being a PE teacher, and it was brilliant. The thing about being a kids entertainer at parties, which is really hard, and why I rate them so much, is parents give you no help.
Here's what annoys me. Here's what really pisses me off. People talking at the bar at a comedy club get kicked out. Parents talking at the back of the room, no one says anything. It drives...
Literally, they come in, you come in, they're like, oh great, where do you need to be? I need to set up here. They go, okay. And then I hear the kids and they just go and just chat and laugh and they're loud at the thing.
So you've got the herbergy in the background the whole time.
Yes. And the whole time the kids like, I can't hear you. I'm like, yeah, I know. Well, tell your dad to shut up. I can't do anything. But then like, if you get like a naughty kid, you can almost see the parent actively not listening. Because I know you can hear them because you spent all your life listening out for them if they're doing something naughty. I know you can hear them. You're not doing anything because you're like, they're your problem now for this hour.
It's weird how often my experience at kids' parties, there's the problem child who's kicking off and you look to the parent who's either at the bar or outside or staring at their phone. It's often the case.
They'll make sure they're out of earshot so that they're like, when my kid kicks off, so I'm just going to head away. And whilst it's annoying when you are the entertainer, I get it. I respect the move.
It's
you know,
such
get that
a
piece.
Hard job, mate. It's,
it's really hard.
It's just like, because one of them's always kicking off, one of them's always going to get bored. To capture a kid's entertainment, it's because the adults have an expectation that you're going to do an hour. But the reality is 20 minutes, 25 minutes is all you're going to get from them tops. Maybe you should do two 10-minute stints or whatever. But you're in this horrible position where the people who are paying you are making it hard. And the people who don't care about you being paid are only interested for 10 minutes. It's so hard. Yeah.
But it's also hard when you do get like kids who, like, not all the time, sometimes you get a party and all the kids are fantastic, but sometimes you get a party where you've got that one or two kids who are just really naughty for the sake of being naughty. And the thing is, you can't discipline them because the minute you discipline them, you destroy the facade of being this fun, whimsical character that's comes at the party. So it's like, you need the parent. It's like, I need you to be the bad guy. Yeah. I can't be the bad guy because I'm making a balloon teddy bear. Like that, it just doesn't work with my brand.
You can't call a child a rat while you're making
it doesn't work. I bought those balloons and I spent time practicing making these, you know, balloon animals and stuff and everything, and it was that was a fun little time, but I don't fucking do it anymore.
Well, that's,
maybe I can make that teddy bear.
That's, I'm going to get in touch with the bosses at CBBC and they can throw you some balloons live on TV.
Like, do
go
it.
Reece, they don't, go.
They don't know that I used to do that, so this might bite me in the bum now.
Let's move on into 2017, Reece. We've got some loose fit men's dungarees. That's a vibe.
Now that's when I joined CBBC. And they encourage you to like buy new clothes and stuff so you can always keep it fresh.
Yes.
And I was like, I put in my head, well, everyone wears dungarees on kids' TV. I'm going to do the same thing. What I didn't realize is most people that wear dungarees on kids' TV are women, and they're always this kind of dungaree play suit stuff. And I was like, I don't care. I'm still going to do it. So I found like this, like, it was like, it's a black pair, isn't it? And it was like, it's got this cool guy in it. He's wearing Tim's. I'm like, I can do that.
He looks like he should be working in a coffee bar in Hoxton. He's very cool.
Yeah, very hipster cool. So I was like, I'm going to buy this. And so I would wear dungarees. I haven't done it in a while. I should. I might wear some dungarees next week now. Because of you. I'd proudly wear them. And I think everyone at first were like, Reece, what is this? But then they'd be like, I kind of like it. And then they started calling me Dungarees around the studio, which I loved very much.
That's your thing.
I was like, I need to make my own line of dungareeses and I'm going to make a fortune. So yeah.
Tell me you're doing this. Is this still your thing then on CBBC to wear dungarees?
I've not worn them in a while, but I need to. I think it's one of those things where if I do, everyone will go, oh, I forgot I used to wear those. And I'll just bring it back straight away. So I'm going to do it. Yeah.
Just for dungarees. Lovely reviews of the dungarees here on Amazon. Kirsten gave them 5 stars. Fits lovely. Thanks. Got this from my dad as he doesn't have an account. Thanks.
So comfortable. I don't know why men don't wear them. You don't have to be working to wear dungarees. I'll be there and my hands are in the pocket. The best is like a little flap at the top so I can hide, like, if I've got like the little iPad that we read things through, I just pop it there and I'm like, what messages have you sent in? It's like Batman's utility belt,
a little marsupial pouch at the front. You can put a baby kangaroo in there. It's good review here from Lee. Gave it 5 stars and then said they were too small. So
how big is Lee? Mine are massive. What?
Maybe just got the wrong size, Lee. But I just like 5 stars. They were too small. But yeah, no, it's interesting, dungarees. Do you know what? I don't think I've ever worn a pair of dungarees. This is like something I need to rectify.
You see a man, when I think of a man in dungarees, especially like a dad or something, I imagine him having like a long coiffed beard and a man bun and having like an espresso or something.
Yeah.
And
so kind of me is what you're thinking. Me, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. You or Jared Leto, like that kind of a look.
Yeah.
Is what comes to mind.
Tats, heavily tats. The sleeve.
Yeah, heavily tats. Yeah,
are you a tattoo fan? Have you got any tats?
I'm not a tattoo fan. I'm not a fan because my thing is, what happens when you're ancient? Like, yeah, that tiger looks cool, but what happens when it just looks like a house cat when you're 80 years old? You know, I don't. My thing is like, wear a t-shirt. Like, then you can take it off and do something else. I've never. The only thing I understand I can get is when people tattoo like their kids or something, because you're never going to divorce or break up with your kids. Usually,
you shouldn't tattoo your kids, mate. You shouldn't tattoo your kids.
Not
That's
your kids.
Immoral.
I mean, your kids. Your
Come
kid
on,
may...
mate. I'm sorry, Reese.
Oh,
this interview's
man.
Over.
That Seriously, is... you're done. They're like, in light of recent events, we're letting you go. When people get the kids' names on their arms up, I'm like, that's cool, or like your grandma, or whatever.
Of course.
When people have done like girlfriends and boyfriends, I'm like, you're the dumbest person in the world. How are you going to do that? What are you thinking?
Or you just don't, you can only ever go out with someone called Angela. That's the other problem you've got.
I heard of someone who had his girlfriend tattooed on his arm, and then they broke, I think girlfriend or wife, and they broke up, got divorced. So what he did was he got it turned into a zombie.
That's quite nice.
Like, that's quite clever.
fitting tribute. That's about like that.
Yeah.
The only tattoo I like, which is Tanny Gray Thompson, brilliant athlete, Tanny Gray Thompson. She has got on her toe, I believe, the recycling logo, which I think is nice.
I like that.
That's never going to go out of date. That one for me works. Let's go on to 2019. 6 items in 2019. Mm. And there's some good stuff in here as well.
Okay.
Like, you've got good. They're all good topics. 11th of March 2019, the Olive Oil Nourishing Sheen Spray.
Yeah. This is for my hair. And I never used it as much, because the thing is, I've got very thick afro hair. And so it's a nightmare to comb unless it's wet. So when I come out of the shower, that's like peak time to comb it. It doesn't hurt. I remember I'm plagued with memories where my mum was like, you've not combed your hair before school. So she does it and she does not care. She's just ripping.
Oh,
and
your eyes water streaming.
Yeah, they did. Oh. They did. And you're crying, but not meaning to. And your mum's just like, bam. And your head's jerking back. And she's like, bam, 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 bam. And like, I remember like my head would be on fire. And so I remember my dad was telling me about, yeah, you should get this olive oil spray. This is when I'd moved up to Manchester and stuff. So I ordered it, came in, and it's changed my life. So even when I don't wash it, if I've not washed it in the shower, I spray that, and it makes it all smooth and inviting and fluffy, and I can just comb it without any pain.
Oh, that's nice. And then also you can use the spray if you need to. If you want to fry some bacon or whatever, spray a bit of that on the pan.
Works both ways.
Olive oil. It's incredibly versatile. It's incredibly versatile. And then we have got elsewhere in 2019, the Green Sun LED Garden Pond Light.
Ah, yeah. That was a gift for my dad. He's he built a pond years ago in our garden, like proper dug up his space. We were like, you're mad. But he dug up a pond. Built like a little pond in the garden. And I will say I admire him greatly because it's in a night, it's very rustic. If you see it, it's very much like he's used like old vases to hold plants and stuff. It's very much, he's used everything around the house to make this pond.
Yeah.
But it's in such a good way now. And I'm so proud of him. And so I bought that for him on Christmas because dads are really hard to buy for. Oh. They're impossible. They are impossible.
Once you've bought them all of the World War II history books, and I'm done. That's it. I'm out.
By that point, right, as a dad, that especially with men, they've weeded out all the hobbies they don't care about anymore. And they only care about like two or three things. You know, usually it's like trains or a football club or something. But my dad had just recently got obsessed with the pond because he worked so... Because the thing was, the fish kept disappearing that you put in there because the neighbor's cats would go for them.
Yeah.
And they became so bold that one time when my dad was trying to cat-proof the pond, a neighbor's cat came and sat next to him just watching him. Just like, you fool. You think you can stop us? So he was diligent with it. And And he's got this koi carp in it now that is massive. It's like, he's proper grown it really well. And it's like a full
they get big. They get really big.
And I'm like, you don't even need to cat proof it, because that thing's beating the cat up.
You need to fish proof the cats now.
Fish proof the cat. Mm. So I bought him these LED lights. So basically around the pond, when the lights go down, it's like we've like multicolored lights, and it's really cool. And Dad was chuffed. He loved it.
There's a little pond disco going on. Yeah. I love that.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, I had an idea of like, I should write like a kid's, because there was a time where a bunch of frogs appeared in the pond. My dad was like trying to get rid of him. He was like, Dad, no, that means the pond is good. That means you've made a really good pond. And like, frogs moving in, it's gentrification. They're gentrifying the pond. Like, leave them alone. So, and I remember thinking, oh man, I should write a children's book based on like the frogs and the fish. It'd be so good to face my dad's pond. He's done really well with it.
The frogs moving in, starting like little frog cafes, you know, and suddenly all the crickets are priced out of the market because of the frogs.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful story there. All right, that's 2019. Lovely, loving you helping with the pod. Oh, we're getting towards the end, Reese. Look, we're in 2020 now. A few orders in 2020.
Oh my gosh, okay.
What have we got here? Oh, this looks interesting. 29th of September 2020, Black and British: A Forgotten History by David Olusoga.
Olusoga. I've got it here. I've literally got it here, right here.
Oh yeah, hello.
Basically it's David Olusoga wrote this amazing book about Black British history, because one of the things most people won't realize is when you learn about famous Black people, it's always Americans. And I'm like, where are the British Black people? And it's annoying because going to get real for that real like it's kind of erased. And I think it's partly because back in that time, you know, slavery ended quicker in Britain because they realized this is inhumane and horrendous, but I feel they were so ashamed by it they just erased it and were like, we'll never talk about it again, because
we had no part of it
that.
At all. It was nothing to do with us.
We had no
so
part of
fine.
It at all. Yeah. We didn't do that. Like, no one talks about the fact of how like loads of the slave plantations in America were owned by British people, or you know how like the cotton mills in Manchester, they got that from the slaves picking it. And so when there were people in Britain who were campaigning to end slavery, you'd have people who didn't want to end slavery because they're like, well, I work at the cotton mill and I need my job, so I'm not supporting that. I don't care if it's slaves, like, that's my job.
Yeah.
Hardly can understand that, because it's easier when you don't see the people suffering. So I bought this book, and it's just phenomenal because it just talks about, like, you know, Black history in Britain that you just didn't know, and that period dramas would have you forget, because that's always one of the things that I've always been annoyed about with period dramas, how there's never Black people or anyone of color there. I'm like, I know they existed. We didn't just come out of the water in 1950 and went, hey, we're here. Like, it didn't happen. Like, they've been around. Like, there is a history of it. So it goes back to like Roman times of possible Black people who are around Roman Britain. And it was because he wrote a kid's book version of it as well, which I implore everyone to get, because it's so simple that even as an adult, you're like, oh my gosh. And then this one is like an adult version. It's beefed up and it's big. And it's really more in depth. And it talks about, I can't remember it very well, so I won't talk too much, but it talks about there's a certain statue in Trafalgar Square. And there's one of the statues where it is a Black man who was actually part of the battalion or the war at that point. It's fascinating. It's just, it's a book that everyone should be getting, and everyone should be learning in history. We need to be having, we're talking about Black History Month and everything. These are things that they should be teaching kids in primary schools, and until that happens.
It's exciting. I find it so exciting that these conversations are obviously far too late, but they're finally happening. That's what is amazing.
It
obviously could have happened earlier. And I can see this book here, David Olusoga, Black and British, and Illustrated History. Yeah, there's the kids version there. That looks good as well.
That one's incredible. I think that one's, I suggest people read that, the kids version, and then move on to the adult version when they can, because I'm still going through it. But like, it's the fact that it's not all of them are slaves. Like, there are some people, there was one, and I can't remember his name very well, but he was a Black man, and he was bought by this very rich aristocratic woman who was a bit of a very unique lady, and she really liked him and raised him like a son instead. And so he was part of like white society and rich society, and he was a bit of a Lothario and was actually quite, he caused a little bit of trouble as well. And I think he got into trouble, and they moved him to France to like protect him or something. So he was a bit of a bad boy. But I just love that. Like, I would watch that show. I would watch a period drama based on this cool, like, Black aristocratic guy who was a bit of like a, you know, of a wild card. It'd be amazing.
And also the variety of that's a great example of the sort of the variety of types of stories that are out there. Whole world of personalities. Whole world
huge.
Of stories.
Yeah, it's why I absolutely love Bridgerton for what it did. Like, whatever you think of it, the fact that it's now showing people, hey, you can have people who aren't white in period dramas. You could have black men as the Mr. Darcy-like role, and it's going to sell. I'm so grateful for that, because I'd watch these shows and be like, oh, it'd be so cool to play that role, but I can't, because apparently we didn't exist. But then you get people complaining about, you know, the realism, but I'm like, sorry, go watch Cleopatra, where everyone seems to be white in Egypt. How does that work?
Or have a look at that Jesus in your church. He wasn't
Jesus
white.
In your church. He wasn't white. He wasn't. Hate to break it to you. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. @ToasterPod is the name we're trying to jam. It's simple like a sarnie filled with cheese and ham. @ToasterPod, I swear it's not a scam, I think.
What's this magnets thing you've got here? 9th of August 2021. First for magnets. 10 adhesive magnets.
Oh my gosh. All right, this is so embarrassing. So I've got a toilet seat that just... I bought a new toilet seat, and it was a soft closing toilet seat, but for some reason it doesn't stay up. So you push it and it just keeps closing. And I got so sick of it. And then I started getting like...
So annoying, because you can't... Because you push it up and you start the wee, and then it falls down while...
falls down, and so you've got to like clench.
That's going to test the prostate right there, mate.
Woo. Proper, or it hits the top, and now you've got to clean everything up, and I absolutely hate it. Or the worst thing is, you go and you do the number two, and it hits your back, so now you're like, I'm uncomfortable because I don't want to be touched by anything.
Yeah.
So I would use blue tack at the beginning to stick it, which would work when it's cold, but when it's hot, useless, because it's got no stick.
It's just, you don't want sort of warm blue tack on a toilet seat.
No,
it's
you don't.
Just,
it looks gross.
Yeah, it looks like a Smurf has pooed there. Like, here you are doing Strictly and you're buying stuff on Amazon Fresh. You're getting lots of food delivered.
Oh yeah, there was, so they put me up in an apartment in Wembley at the time I was there, which is why I was really glad I made it all the way to the semi-final, because I was basically in every episode of the series. Yes. And it meant I got good use out of that apartment the whole time. So I was like winning.
Free digs, mate. Free digs. Love that.
Free digs. So some people might not know this, but there's like these Amazon Fresh stores in parts of the UK. And basically all you do, you go up there, you type in a code in the Amazon app, and you scan in and you walk in, you just take the stuff and go. Yeah. The money just gets taken out of your account. I cannot believe this. There's no register.
It's insane. You are basically shoplifting off Jeff Bezos. That's what it feels like.
What? You get all the thrill of shoplifting and none of the consequences, because you're actually paying for it.
Because it's completely legit. It's incredible. Yeah. It's amazing. And at this point as well, where are we? 20th of December 2021. I mean, that's after Strictly finished. That's like the weekend after. Was there a conversation when AJ had that awful slip? Were you talked to about going back in for the final? That just
I wasn't,
didn't happen?
No. I found out that she was injured on a Wednesday. So I was sitting there with my friend, and it was like the evening, and I looked at my Instagram and saw the picture of AJ with her foot in a boot, and I went, oh my gosh, are we going to be in the final? And then I thought, I've got 3 days. I don't want to be in the final. I don't want to be there now.
Two dances? Is that what you got to do in the final?
Three dances.
No. Like, not for me, not mate. Happening. Not for me.
No way. So then I remember my girlfriend messaged me and she went, can you please do a story just saying you're not in the final, because I'm sick of getting all these messages from people asking if you're in it. And I was like, yeah, fine. And I was like, listen, guys, it's not happening. There's no way. If they had, I probably would have tried it. But at the same time, I would have known, I wouldn't have been there to compete to win. I would have been there to enjoy the fact that I could dance one more time, which would have been lovely. I would have been like, look, I'm just here as a backing dancer for Rose and John. But, you know, it's nice to be here. It's nice to take part.
It's I know you've been told this a million times, but it's so unfortunate that you came along and did Strictly on the year. It's a bit like Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, you know, trying to be a tennis player. During, you just had that year and you were unbelievably good, mate. You were as good as those guys. It just came down to... a cigarette paper between all of you. I mean, fuck.
I know. You know what? That's the thing I get told. The things that people keep saying is, it was like, you're my favorite. We voted for you. You should have won. Wrong year. Any other year, you would have won it. And I was like, you know what? It's lovely to hear. And yeah, there is a part where it's like, gosh, any other year, and I would have, it might have been different. Oh no, that sounds really big headed, but like maybe it would have been different.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is probably one of the most dynamic and successful and popular years has ever been. And I think it's almost a gift to be a part of that series anyway.
Totally.
You know, because it totally. Was, because the thing that I noticed is in the semi-final of the contestants, you had a gay man, a deaf woman, a black woman, and a black man. And I went, oh my gosh, I'm the most conservative choice. Final. I could not believe it. In like, true. If you know, so I was like, we're in the new age here. It was spectacular. I wouldn't change it for the world.
It was really, it was encouraging to see, because you just know in years gone by, things like Big Brother 10, 15 years ago, the people of color never made it to the final, no matter how good they were. Things like Bake Off and stuff like that. And to sit there and watch it and go, good, there you are. Right.
Yeah.
Was just like,
when early on, we were like in week three, and myself, Hugo, and me, Hugo, and AJ were talking. We went, we've never had this many black people make it this far in Strictly before. How has this happened? And it was, and it's true.
Something must have changed.
Because people always, you know, shout racism and stuff like that. And I don't think it's strictly that. I think just sometimes people like to vote for who they see themselves in. And I think maybe at that time, people just didn't see themselves in people who didn't look that much like them. Mm. And you look at the demographic of Strictly, it's mostly white people. It's mostly white people of a certain class. That's not an attack. It's just an observation. I noticed that on the tour. Like, I'd walk out on the tour and I'd see nothing. It would be very much white people. The closest I really saw was, I remember I saw two mixed race kids, but with a white mum. And so I'd see that and I'd think, part of the reason why I think sometimes it's difficult, but then Ore won, you know, it's not impossible.
No, absolutely.
But I think there are factors in it. It's not a horrible thing. It's just an observation. But it was lovely that in that final that happened, like you said, Tom, I think people's minds are changing a bit.
Yeah.
And they're starting to appreciate the diversity of this country. And I think that's gorgeous.
And see themselves in people who don't necessarily have, this is the important point.
Yeah.
People who aren't like them, who are maybe deaf or just whatever, same-sex couples, whatever, to understand this basic thing that they're just like me. I mean, it's pretty basic. And we're told to think like that since we're kids, but society hasn't let us do that. And now, maybe it's changing. I don't know.
I got recognised in London, and it was like a little white girl, and she spoke to mum like, that's right. And mum was like, she loved you. And I thought, I was so surprised, because I'm like, I think she'd be loving Rose, she'd be loving Tilly, like all these other like wonderful like girls were on it. But she loved me. And I just went, I love that she, for some, I don't know, whatever, she just didn't think straight so on like, lovely. I don't look like him, so I can't love him. I love this guy for what he does. It's gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. Really cool.
Right, okay, here's what we're going to do. We are at the last thing on your Amazon purchase history. In fact, Rhys Stevenson, this cost you £20. This was ordered on the 20th of February 2022. And I've seen you talking about this on your Instagram the other day. The Genius Square STEM puzzle game. Here we go. Here we go.
It's right here. It's right here.
Excellent. Tom, excellent.
It's such a good game. Oh my gosh. So this is not the one that I bought, actually. My girlfriend's parents bought it for me for Christmas. Right. And I remember I saw it and I was like, I'm not bothered to learn this right now. And I remember I took it on a trip. Me and my girlfriend, my friend and his girlfriend all went off to Wales over the Christmas holidays. And we brought a bunch of board games and we didn't play this one. And so when we got back, I left this at his house by accident. And I took so long to get it back that when I went and saw him, he was like, bro, have you played this game? And I was like, no, it's so good. I went, you played it? We got so sick of you, of waiting for you to come and get it, that we got so bored, we just played
opened it.
And we opened
that is
it.
That's cellophane wrapped. How dare you?
I know. But they didn't know. They went, we didn't know that you hadn't opened it. And they were like, we're so sorry. We know we wouldn't have done it. But it's basically, all you do is you have a grid. You have a grid. It's these guys. I'll show you a little bit.
Right.
So you have this grid. And then you've got like a bunch of like Tetris-looking shapes.
Yeah.
And you've got these like circular blocks. And basically you roll 7 dice.
Yeah.
And then whatever the dice land in the coordinates, that's where you place them on the grid. So by the end of it, you have like 7 of these like wooden squares on the grid.
Okay.
And basically you've now got to fill out the rest of the grid using those shapes. And you can always fill it out. No matter where the blocks go, on the grid, you can always fill it out with these shapes,
and you have to compete against the other person. The first person to fill out the grids,
first person to do it wins. So you've got like, you know, like a square, or you've got like a really long piece that's like 4 blocks.
Oh, and it's
like,
literally Tetris, isn't it? Yeah,
literally Tetris. And you just got to figure it out before the other person does it, and it's so simple but really, really fun. And I just got obsessed with it. So basically, I showed my sister and her boyfriend it, and they loved it. So basically, as a late Christmas present for my sister's boyfriend, I bought him the Genius Square as well, so he could play it.
Nightclubbing and, you know, going out and getting wasted in festivals, you know, they have a place in our lives, but nothing will ever make me as happy as board games and card games and staying in and doing these things. Nothing.
Board games have gotten really, like, high tech now. Like, they're like video games. Like, I've never known a world where you buy a board game and then you can buy an expansion pack for the board game. It's like Call of Duty is too much. Yeah. And suddenly it's not enough. Have you ever played Pandemic, Tom?
No.
Board game. It's like basically you work together and there's a sickness that's taken over like the world and you've got to work together to like eradicate
it. Too soon, mate.
Now that I hear that, that doesn't sound right. But it's a very good game when, you know, we weren't stuck with current events. I love board games. And it's funny, you discover it in uni. Uni's when people play board games
It's cheap to stay in and drink at home and, you know.
Yeah. It's great. You have a really good time as long as it's not Monopoly, because no one survives Monopoly.
I love that we started off, we talked about the inner child, and here you are staying at home playing games. See? Perfect.
That's what I do.
Perfect. I love it.
Keeps you fresh.
Rhys Stevenson, you're brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And listen, good luck with everything. Stay in touch.
Thank you, Tom. I will do. I'll call you up for a game of Genius Square when I'm down in Holloway.
Yes, mate, please do. And Pokemon-wise, you're going to be my kids' consultant now, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll let them know. I'll be like, boy, don't you trade that golden Seedra. I will disown you. You keep that Dragonite. No, I've got them. I've got their back.
Oh, you're a star. Thanks, mate. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Well, I think we can all agree that Rhys Stevenson is the nicest man in the world. If you didn't watch the last series of Strictly, I hope you still loved this episode, because he's such a top, top guy. And if you did watch Strictly, I'm sure you thoroughly enjoyed all that behind the scenes goss. There's an extra chunk of Rhys chat that's up at patreon.com/toasterpod. He talks about how he got his big break on CBBC. Head over to patreon.com/toasterpod. Just £4 a month, guys. Just £4 little pounds. And you get advert-free episodes and you get episodes in advance. In fact, next week's episode is already up at patreon.com/toasterpod, just £4 a month. And next week's episode will be featuring the Sunday Times top 10 best-selling author, Beth Morrie. We're back in 2001. So straight away, we've gone to a time before we were together, Beth.
Oh, before we'd met?
Yeah. Yeah, December 2001 was before we met. So there's still like a year and a half before you stole my 20s from me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was when I was having all sorts of fun.
All right. That's right. My wife is going to be coming on the show next week. How exciting. She's got a brand new book out, Emma and Me. It's very, very good. So, you know what? I thought I'd get her on the show and have a proper snoop. You know, week after that, I'm going to read her diaries. It's going to be great. All right, lots of love. See you next week for the next episode. Ta-ra. It's my mate.